So 6:30.
I declare the meeting open. Welcome, everyone, especially our visitors from the Department of Environment and Water, etc. We begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. I'll let everybody know that the audio of the General Council meeting will be recorded and made available on the City of Marion website. I'll ask elected members if they foresee any possible conflict of interest with an item on the agenda, or that can be addressed at the time if it comes up. Corporate reports, we start off with Glenthorne. So I'd invite, I'm not sure who is making a presentation exactly, but I believe there's a short presentation. So I'll invite those gentlemen forward. If you could just introduce yourselves again. I know I do recall you from previous occasion, but if you could introduce yourselves or Mr. Haridis, perhaps, and take it away. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor and councillors, with us this evening to just talk us through some of the progress that represents the final concept design for the purposes of going to tender. Jared Eaton, who's the project manager, I'll have Jared introduce the consultant who's with him and then hand to you to run us through the presentation.
Thank you, Ilya. So tonight we have Damien Green from Taylor Cullet Leithlin. Sorry, Damien Schultz. I do know another Damien Green. My apologies about that. So what we'd like to do tonight is run you through where we're up to in terms of the nature play designs. We came and spoke to council back on, I think, the 17th of August from memory. So we've done a significant amount of work to the designs and been working quite closely with Ilya and his team within council to get to the position where we're at tonight. So I'd just like to acknowledge council's input over the last couple of months in relation to the development of the project. Next slide, please. Okay, thank you. So in terms of the budget and contributions, I will give you a breakdown of the different elements. So in terms of the contribution from City of Marion, there was $2 million towards the nature play elements. With the main visitor hub, there's a state government contribution of $5.2 million, which includes the inclusive nature play zone, supportive infrastructure and roads. So that's all of the car parking and the additional amenities which are being put in place. So that is the toilets, the barbecue facilities, the shelters, the landscaping, and the Class 1 trails, which we'll show you a slide further on this evening where the Class 1 trails are going. That also includes the watercourse rehabilitation side of works, which is going to be an important feature within the nature play zone. The trail network outside of the main visitor hub, that's around $1.2 million. Heritage building restoration works is around $500,000, and environmental restoration, which is the planting and land management works, that's around $1.7 million. So that's all in addition to the approximate value of the land, which is around about $80 million. Slide. So in terms of the deed requirements, so council is responsible for being a member of the project control group. So we have a group established which includes the consultants being TCL and members from the City of Marion. We have got consultation with the executive and elected members and community stakeholders on playground options. Back in August, we talked about we ran a schools engagement program. So a number of the design elements that occurred during the schools engagement program are represented in the designs, which we'll be providing and running through tonight. Council endorsement of the final design prior to calling tenders for the construction, attend site meetings as a member of the project control group, and acquittals process that DW must report on, references to council as an equal funding partner in all media, council as part of the sod turning and opening event, and any plaques, including reference to council. So the department's responsibilities relate to the chairing of the project control group, budget and reporting, approvals, community and stakeholder consultation, management of the consultants and contractors, construction, consultation with council, maintenance and upkeep, and importantly, asset ownership and management moving forward. So in terms of council's project vision and objectives, the rationale here was to provide a high quality, unique play area that will attract residents and tourists. A nature play ground similar to Macanthe play space at Murrieta Conservation Park, and a play area that reflects the site history. In terms of the department's visions and objectives, the play precinct will be an innovative place for children of all ages, cultures, and degrees of mobility to enjoy imaginative and creative play in a natural setting. And through the play, children will learn about conservation issues that are relevant to Adelaide and also to South Australia. And that's also through a whole range of the different measures outlined there and the dot points on that slide. So in terms of further about the deed requirements, the scope of work included a palette of natural materials, iconic elements with a wow factor. So we believe that we've got a whole range of wow factor elements being included in different areas throughout the nature play space. And Damien will talk more about that tonight. We'll also look at the accessible elements, transition to nature play from picnic area. The use of the hill and mature trees, we talked last time about the location, has now changed from being on top of the side of the hill, being integrated down into the main visitor hub area. So that principle there is no longer relevant to the site. Looking at the interpretive, imaginative elements relating to the history of the site and designs to include a transition from toddler play to more challenging destinations. Again, Damien will talk more about that this evening, and signage reflecting the partnership with council. So in terms of the guides for types of facilities that may occur as a citywide attraction, again, these have been taken from the funding deed. So extensive play equipment, including swings, slides, combination systems, climbing structures, and nature play, opportunities for specific play elements, soft fall seats, multiple picnic facilities, barbecue and drink fountains. There are three drinking fountains in near vicinity and including within the nature play space, vegetation amenity plantings, including adequate plantings for shade, pathways, shade and shelter, potential for artificial shade over play equipment, landscaping, car parking, stormwater works, integrated public art, and toilets. So what I'll do now is I'll pass over to Damien. Thank you.
Thanks, Jared.
And sorry, from the chair, can I just say that if there are slides with text, you don't need to read them all out. We've read the documentation, but by all means, highlight the key points. Thank you. And then we'll have time for questions from members, which will probably be very useful. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you. And thank you, Jared. So the slide you see on screen is the master plan we've been working on with Dew for the stage one precinct for Glenthorne National Park. It has a long-ish entry road that really provides an entry experience for people coming into the precinct. Our aim is ultimately to make sure that this park feels like a national park from day one. We know that there'll be more plantings that happen in time. That will take time for those to grow, but by providing a journey in and providing a journey that highlights the views of existing heritage, existing natural assets, we can create a space that feels like a national park as you move into the site. You can see the playground site sits to the right of the plan, centred on part of the creek rehabilitation, just to the west of the existing barn building. Next slide, please. So the next slide highlights some of those views that we get as visitors come in along the main entry road and some of the views that you see from within the park. Each of the views, as I said, take into account some of the existing heritage features and new architecture that's being provided within the site is also responsive to the architecture of the site. So the next slide just highlights how we're getting into the site, both vehicles, buses are able to come into the site. We have around 150 car parks distributed throughout the precinct. So there's a lot of opportunities for the community to come in. Some people will be wanting to attend the playground as a real feature in the site. Others will be more drawn to either natural assets or heritage precincts or events within that site as well. So there's capacity for all forms of transport to come in, and a whole series of trails that link people from those destinations. Many of them are class two trails, or in some instances, class one trails, allowing equal access from car parks throughout the site. The amount of class one trails within this precinct is quite unique in that often these sort of trails are not provided within national park settings, particularly sites where we have the topography that we have on this particular location. We have been working very closely with DEW on the interpretation. So the interpretation being led by the internal DEW team. So we're working with them very closely to work through the themes that will be present not only within the playground, but the broader site. We see that interpretation not as something that's just located within the playground itself, but spreads itself far and beyond along all the trails that link to it. Within the and very close to the playground, there is a key destination node where there is key signage that will lead people to all parts of the park. Within the playground itself, we have located a number of interpretation nodes and also mapping the stories that exist that will be contributed by the broader parts of the site. The interpretation approach is to really provide it in a first-person narrative. This enables people to have a further engagement with the site. It's not just a fact-finding mission, but it's told as if the original people that were on that site are actually telling a story about things that have happened. So we have a number of stories, whether they be from Dora Campbell's perspective and views back to the munitions block. From Gordon Keane's perspective, it might be some traditional games like hopscotch that might be located on a deck just near where Glenthorne House was. We certainly have stories around Kaurna and their use of the site. We have a key meeting location for Indigenous groups to meet and you know, start tours from that particular area of the site. And you're also working on how we can provide AR views as part of digital media, as part of the interpretation on and around the site as well. The well also features within the playground as a piece of infrastructure that can tell a story about the site's past use. The next slide shows in the top left image how we're using sound interactive sculptures to reflect native plant species. We have stories on top of tree sculptures that will reflect Kaurna stories around bird spirits. And we're working closely with some Kaurna people around how that interpretation of sculpture will work. We have rock fossils for etching and rubbing in elevated sand boxes for children that are mobility impaired or adults in that space. And we've ensured that there's a lookout with integrated interpretation on the armrests that look across the munitions block, but also in reverse back across to where the barn and Glenthorne House would have stood, where you can see the ruins. So the concept design for the playground itself essentially is made up of three parts. So there's the rehabilitated creek that passes through the middle of the site. There is a rocky escarpment with a number of play features through it to the western part or the north of the page that's shown on screen. And we have a tree forest logs section that sits to the south of the page. It isn't clearly defined where each area starts and stops. What we've aimed to do is create a playground that is seamless and integrated as a whole, rather than a playground that's made up of lots of individual parts. This approach allows the playground equipment to be discovered rather than just merely displayed, and kids immediately know what to do. So they need to discover those play opportunities as they move through the site. We've been very respectful to the context of it being in a national park setting, and in particular to the heritage buildings around, and making sure that some of the equipment's therefore not at odds with some of the heritage views within the site. So if we look at some of the key areas. So one of the parts of this plan on the next slide we can see in what we've highlighted in orange is a number of trails that are accessible for people with mobility issues. So you can see through this, there are a number of ways in which someone that's mobility impaired can move through the site. And those black dots that you see on the screen represent inclusive play elements that exist throughout that site. So it's not located in only one area, it's distributed throughout the whole of the playground itself. On the next slide, it's just an important reminder really that when we talk about play, it's not just about physical play of getting up high and doing these things. There's a whole range of things that children will engage with. So there's water play when we have an ephemeral creek, so children will be able to engage in that creek line setting. They can obviously do physical activities where they're climbing up high and using physical strength to actually move through things. There's perception of spaces, and that's when things are big or small. So kids will often engage in items that are large or small. And so play happens at different levels in that. There are ways in which kids will interact with each other, whether they be friends that they bring along or new kids that they meet at the playground. So we provide spaces like little cubbies and nooks where they can actually sit in smaller spaces where they can engage in social interaction. There's creative and cognitive play, imagination and role playing when they might be pretending to be some of the early settlers at Glenthorne in some instances, or pretend that they're part of the Indigenous community and engaging with different parts of the creek as our ancestors would have in many years ago. Spatially, there's different ways in which they can move through areas. So we've created canyons and different spaces in rock. And we provide challenging situations where it challenges different age groups to be able to climb, whether something's easy or something's hard, depending on age groups. So there's play for all ages and all abilities within this space. Now, those little diagrams will pop up. It would have popped up in the diagrams that you see on the following pages that sort of show what sort of play can we expect from the individual play elements that sit within the sites. So on the entry zone, we have a number of sculptural elements. I won't go through all of the parts on. There's a lot of information in the package that's been provided, and hopefully you've had a chance to see all the individual play elements. But there's sculptural play within that space that refer back to the original site and use a scale to reference some of the planting and plants, flowers and nuts that become part of that vegetation as you go through. There's a number of ways in which children can cross the creek line itself with different log formations in easy and challenging ways to cross the creek line. They can also walk through the creek line in terms of rock ways across the waterway itself. We have rock fossils and etching rubbings that children can engage with, both for mobility impaired and active people within the space. There's a merry-go-round, if you like to call it that, or a spinner that's been specially designed for children in wheelchairs as part of this outcome. We have a universal seesaw. So again, these are really quite rare things that people in wheelchairs really don't get to experience. Again, a custom design element around a seesaw and that spinner, as well as typical slides and swings that exist in these sort of precincts. The next slide gives you a bit of a view of what it feels like within that space. You can see the coconut swing that sits in the background, the universal seesaw sitting there, as well as these sculptural elements that kids can turn into cubbies, small spaces to move within, but also engage in any of the sound interactives that exist within those elements. You can see on the right there one of the crossings, or a disabled wheelchair-friendly crossing across the creek. The next slide is another view of that same space. You can see the universal spinner in the foreground. The next slide has the elevated accessible log where kids can do fossil digs within that element. It's elevated so it's accessible for children in wheelchairs. A broader view of that area shows the largest sand pit and the tree tower located within the escarpment in the background. A number of the rocks and logs within this location also form seating opportunities for people within the site, both informal and formalised. The escarpment itself has a number of trails that move through it. So you can imagine walking through a space where there's elevated rocks. Some of the rocks form cave-like structures or spaces that you can move under. There are logs as if there are trees that have fallen within that precinct, or trees that have emerged from the escarpment in its natural setting. We find that there are carvings throughout those rock surfaces for children to encounter. They can obviously climb the rock faces themselves up to high locations. The escarpment itself within the tree tower accesses the largest slide that I believe exists in Marion. So this slide is around 5.5 metres high in the air. Children can get up to another level above that into an enclosed space where they can get views above and around the precinct. We have two smaller slides that are inclusive and accessible, that are 3.5 metre slides and a 1.5 metre slide. As part of that, there are tunnels that children can go through within this space, and smaller activities that they can engage in around the escarpment itself, as well as coming across opportunities where there's interpretation located through that whole space. So the next slide just gives some views from within that escarpment, looking back across to the entry plaza. So you can see where children are immersed amongst the rock faces themselves. I would note that the rocks here are obviously from a rendering software, and the rocks will be specifically what we can obtain from stockpiles within Glenthorne that are on site already. So allow us some artistic license for the purpose of these renders. The next slide shows one of the tunnels that you move through. These are accessible for children in wheelchairs or people that are mobility impaired. So the experience of moving through this rocky escarpment is not it's not only for people that are mobile throughout the site. We anticipate that this will be a space that'll be really fantastic for children to experience with their parents as an intergenerational learning space, because it is unfamiliar in terms of a lot of children and their engagement with nature, and that the equipment itself is not out there just announcing itself. So children will actually have to find it, and the parents will find it with their children on that basis. The next slide shows an elevated view. Some of these spaces, like in many national parks, we have lookouts over elevated sections of natural bush. So this is an experience that children can also experience within the playground, but it also provides access to things like the 3.5 metre slide in this location. And you can see in the bottom there the accessible log that crosses over the creek. There are rocks that kids can slide on. The surfaces of the rock are relatively smooth. This is an experience that you get in a number of national parks, and where these rocks are angled in their natural setting. Within the escarpment on the next slide, you can see that there is some built shade. So as part of the architectural package and a separate contract, we have picnic tables and barbecues provided in and around the playground itself. So this provides some immediate shade from day one, whereby in a site where we don't have a lot of natural vegetation along the creek line, we have something immediate while other vegetation is able to mature as it is revegetated. This image, you can see the elevated tree tower. You can see how logs are placed in and against the escarpment itself, that allows children to make play on their own rights and choose how they might collect things from the site and build cubbies within this setting. There are burnt out logs that have holes in them that children can play peekaboo through. Or you can imagine just the number of Instagram shots that will come from something like that from parents that are visiting the site. The next image just shows a closer up view of the tree tower that's embedded in the escarpment. You can see it's as if the tree roots are emerging from amongst the rocks. Parents and children alike will move their way through this tree root maze as they get into the zone where they're able to climb up to the top of the tower. The next slide just shows some sections through that space and how the tower is incorporated into the escarpment structure itself. And the next section of the report just focuses on the log forest and in particular on this slide, a ceremony space for Indigenous connections to site. So the next slide from that shows a view of the bird spirit sculptures, these upturned trees and the branches that sit at the ground form basic structures that children can then add more loose sticks to and create cubbies for themselves. They can also climb over these structures within a managed height. The stories from the tree sculptures themselves can then be used as discussion points for guided tours when Indigenous guides might come out to the site and take people through the playground and to the broader sections of Glenthorne. So just another view on the next slide, you can see there's a meeting space there. The great thing about this meeting space is that it talks to the fact that Indigenous communities would often either follow creek lines or cross creek lines to these meeting spots where they would often meet at a water body. And we have a space that provides seating. There's formal shelter just adjacent to this area, but there's a lot of storytelling possibilities within this location. The adventure play section is an elaboration of the log forest itself. It contains more adventurous log play elements within it. A number of features exist within this site, including the log climbing structure, which is a stack of logs which sits on the left of that image. There are basket swings on customized structures that support them, customized monkey bars and log balancing beams that exist within this play area. The next slide shows another view of that, where you've got the creek line along to the right of that space, and shows the connection between the Kaurna meeting space, the spirit poles, and the stepping logs and log climbing structure. We have access throughout this area, enabling mobility impaired children to also access some of those basket swings within that space and move through the different log climbing elements. So the last section of the report just tries to highlight some of the individual elements. Sometimes it is a little bit difficult to see these elements when they're integrated as a complete package and a more superstructure. So we extracted them as individual elements just to highlight how those individual play areas are integrated into the overall playground design. So a few pages of this, those individual elements. And just the last section is on how those river crossings are incorporated. So from there, I'll invite any questions to Jared and I.
Thank you. Now, ordinarily, meeting rules, members, you have three questions each. So I'll try and be liberal with that, given the importance of the project, but please bear that in mind. Who'd like to go first? Councillor Telfer?
Can you clarify the maintenance and the repair sort of regime over the first 10 years? How heavy will that be?
With all playgrounds, there's regular inspections. I assume you would be doing this on your own playgrounds within the city of Marion. It's an intensive review process more than anything else. We are only using pretty resilient materials. So we're using red gum for the main timber structures. The rock is obviously stabilised and from local quarries. So we don't anticipate any issues with those components. Usually with playgrounds, the elements that require most maintenance are anything that's moving. So we can expect something like the spinner or the inclusive seesaw to have some levels of maintenance that might be required of those elements. But more so, it's inspections around safety and maintaining those elements and ensuring that soft fall is maintained to the adequate levels to maintain safety.
Anything else, Councillor Telfer, for the moment? No, then Councillor Hull.
Well, congratulations, gentlemen. It's everything that I hope for when we as a council a few years back started talking about the destination play space.
And Councillor, if you could proceed to questions or clarification. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have two questions along the lines of Councillor Telfer, and it's about protecting our asset. It isn't a national park, so is there a bushfire management plan and evacuation plan for the site?
Yes, there is.
Okay. White ants, a lot of timber. We've learned from Warrapringa with some of our timber that we got from the Second Valley, we lost those with white ants, and we almost lost the house. So have you got a termite management plan for the site?
So not a termite management plan at this point in time, but certainly through the regular inspection process, those sort of issues will be looked for. And I think, Damien, you could probably clarify that in relation to the timber going in the ground, I think the below ground components are treated prior to it going into the ground.
Yes, so we, in the first instance, using durable timber, which is the first key area. Underground treatments are undertaken to protect timber from rotting at that level. That's something that is actually always inspected as part of playground inspections, that ground connection in particular, where equipment meets ground surfaces and where equipment also goes under the foreseeable surface. So it's part of a regular part of the inspections around that. There can be obviously inspections from pest control people that can be as written in as part of that maintenance program.
Do you have another, Councillor Hull? Thank you. I just want to add, in case members of the public are listening, perhaps as a result of Councillor Telfer's question about maintenance and Councillor Hull's question or comment about our asset, I want to clarify that this we are contributing to an asset which will be owned by the minister, effectively, as the registered proprietor of the national park that it is. Would one of you like to, one of our guests like to just confirm that or clarify that? Thanks.
So I can clarify that. So any of the assets going in will be under the administration of the minister. So the responsible minister at the moment being for environment and water.
Thanks. That's what I was trying to say.
Could I just clarify?
Councillor Hull?
Given that there's ratepayers and tax money going into this, we all pay.
Our assets used in the broadest sense, I understand. That's fair enough. Fair enough. No problem. Councillor Pryor?
I've got a quick one about budgets and scope. If this comes back on perfectly on budget, I understand you deliver the whole scope. If it comes back over budget, where would we look to cut scope, and what's the likely scenario? Or is it a scenario where perhaps the minister would extend the budget?
So if it comes back over scope, we'll just need to, work out whether there's a reduction in elements or not. However, we do have contingencies available which can assist with managing some of those issues. It's not just contingencies within the nature play space, it's a broader project contingency. So we do have the ability to, if required, move budgets around.
Councillor Gard.
Yes, Your Worship, through the Chair, I'd like to thank you both for a very informative presentation. It's extremely exciting. I think when you see it like that, more exciting than the written word, of course. My questions are firstly in relation to access by bike. The roads up in that area are fast roads. So is there a plan for bike or bike way access maybe growing over a period of time? The second question relates to security with a mixture of young to older children and adults? Will there be good monitoring throughout the amenity? And the third is in relation to safety. Is there likely to be someone, will it be manned in respect of ensuring that behaviour is good and safe?
Thank you for your question. So in relation to bike access, the park will be open for bike access, but we envisage it more being, you know, with the sort of young children and family type biking, not necessarily what you see over the road in O'Halloran Hill, where there's, you know, sort of high speed downhill mountain biking. So we want it to be a, you know, a much more family friendly place. So we'll certainly have the ability for people to ride bikes on class one compliant trails and a whole range of different areas through there. In relation to security and safety, they're sort of, I guess, intertwined, those two things there. So we won't necessarily have the nature playground being manned, but certainly there's a strong ranger presence on the park. So there's the new South Metro ranger station, which has been established there, which I think, Grant, there's about five or six rangers throughout that whole precinct there. So that has just been recently upgraded from about having three rangers there. And no doubt, given the, I guess, the prominent citywide attraction that will be built there, they'll be spending a fair bit of time going down that area, making sure that people are doing the right thing. Also in relation to security and safety, you know, it's responsibility of, I guess, all people, parents included, to ensure that, you know, they do keep a watch on children as they're moving around the place as well. So it's not just responsibility back on the government staff, it's a parent-based responsibility too.
Councillor Gard.
Yes, you might have misunderstood me on the bike side of things. What I meant was access to the facility by bike. Top of my mind, I can't visualise bikeways heading that way. And we know there's going to be roadworks on Majors Road, which will make that a quite a highway, I guess. So from the point of view of conjoining the facility with existing bikeways, I imagine quite a few teenagers at least will want to ride. Sure. And just from the point of view of their safety out of the traffic.
Yep. So it's a very good question. So we are working quite closely with the Department for Infrastructure and Transport at the moment in relation to safe crossing zones across Majors Road in lieu of the larger upgrade, which will be coming. So we're working with them, like around the extension of the Patrick Jonker Veloway that comes through. So having middle islands in the middle of the road so people can then cross safely across, obviously, the southern side to the northern side and vice versa.
Very well. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. Just want to confirm. So at the moment, we've had a couple of different concept designs. Can I just confirm that when we move to the design phase, pretty much all those elements would exist, but they could be in different locations around the playground or around the park?
Yes, as we go through the design process, obviously we're undertaking audit processes on safety and making sure we've got adequate safety margins around different fall zones and those things. Sometimes we do need to adjust things as we move along. With the nature of this playground, which is made out of natural elements, so rocks, trees, we have no idea what tree we might end up getting to build some of these elements. So, you know, the way that we represent it in this sketch, if the tree might arrive on site like the one that did today, different, but we would adopt, you know, the same principles around these sort of play elements and try and keep them as best we can in the arrangement that you see. But it is a different process than, say, buying something out of a catalogue, where what you see in the picture in the catalogue is what you get on the back of the truck, because we're building a very focused nature play outcome and one that we don't think is duplicated in Adelaide in that sense. So
one of the ones, I noticed you moved the tower from one place to another, and I thought the tower was quite good at looking at the totems, so kids can actually get up and see what's on those structures. Any possibility of two towers, so kids can actually spy on each other from one tower to another, but get the benefit of seeing that those sculptures or those stories on the trees?
At the moment, we're fortunate enough to have one tree secured from another national park to facilitate the tower that we've got. There has been a request to make sure that that is attached to some of the highest equipment, so the taller slide, for example, so it provides access to that in that element. What we're wanting to do is try and provide some diversity in the height of those elements, so we thought it was best located as we developed it up, in that being as part of the escarpment. We can also use that structure to help with parts of the other structural elements to offset some costs that sit in as part of the escarpment, and then build the, the falling sticks climbing area as an alternative way to get up high.
Maybe no twin towers. Okay. Councillor Valescu? Councillor Valescu?
It's a very good question. You'll always get snakes in national parks, conservation parks, recreation parks, but given that we have a presence of rangers on site, they can assist with relocation of snakes if they do occur. I mean, it's no different to having one appear in your backyard, really. So there's a possibility of snakes being in there, but generally you'll probably find that if you've got potentially, you know, hundreds of kids running around the place, they may tend to sort of stick away from some of those areas.
Any other questions? Well, we can probably get straight into, would someone like to move a motion, Councillor Schilling, as printed? Yes, seconded Councillor Schilling. Oh, sorry, seconded Councillor Crossland. Yes. Any further comments either? No. Anyone speaking against the motion? If not, ask for a show of hands. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. So thank you indeed for the presentation and all your work. And thank you, staff of City of Marion, for helping to refine the process as well. Thank you. And we'll look forward to the final design. Thanks again. We'll move on to Glandore Oval. Who would like to move? Councillor Mason?
Just a question to start off with, please. I know that quite a large number of residents from Glandore received a letter today from DIT to state that their property is going to be impacted. Just wondering if we've received a similar letter and what was the outcome?
Yes, an update on land acquisition in Glandore for the North-South Corridor project, please. Mr. Harrison.
Tasa, thank you through the chair. So it was a matter of hours earlier on this afternoon that we received information that led us to do further research about the understanding about letters of acquisition, which have gone through. We had a verbal piece of advice provided that some 110 properties would be included in an acquisition process in the suburb of Glandore. We then sought further information. We were provided with confirmation now in writing in the form of email on two occasions through two different people. So we've had good corroboration and I think reliability that it is the piece of land that is bordered north of Gertrude Street, which is the first street on the northern side of Glandore Oval. And we've also had further guarantee, north of Gertrude Street through to the tram line, which will be the tunnel exit coming back up onto South Road. And the documented information we've had provided confirms that the Glandore Oval will in no way whatsoever need to be accessed or utilised during construction purposes and or will be sought after for the purpose of a land acquisition. So I think we can certainly go forward confidently with documented correspondence this afternoon that any consideration pertaining to cricket nets, rose gardens or further enhancements will not have to take into consideration any future impacts of land acquisition in the suburb of Glandore.
A very good and timely question and a comforting answer, which is fresh off the press, basically. So would you like to move the motion?
Thank you for that. Yeah, I'd like to move as read. Thank you.
Any comment? Is that seconded? Councillor Masika? Any comment?
No. Comment, Your Worship, I'd like to second the motion as printed.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull.
I'm not speaking against, Mr. Mayor, just asking a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Of course, please.
Just to drill down with Mr. Harrison's answer, as I see it in this precinct, there's two different major infrastructure projects that may impact on this area. One being the north-south corridor, the other being the link from Crossroad with heavy vehicles onto South Road. So is that a qualified answer in terms of both projects or only one?
It's qualified in the sense we can incorporate both of those propositions you put forward in the sense unequivocally the documented information provided in the last 3 hours is that in no way whatsoever will any form of construction and or land acquisition be impacted on the Glandore Oval precinct as it stands at the moment.
That's in relation to just the north-south corridor or the prospect of a major connection from Crossroad?
Absolutely the north-south corridor. We haven't made reference to the link that you're referring to from Crossroads, but in relation to any construction, laydown area or utilisation of the Glandore Oval, it's unequivocal that will not be impacted by the north-south corridor tunnel construction process.
I'll just see if Mr. Haridis has any more detail. I know he's been close to the project.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, confirming the CEO's comments, that's correct with regard to South Road. As councillors may recall, the Crossroad interface was communicated to this chamber as being an entirely separate project. And to that end, that project is not commencing and hasn't formed any part of the letters that have gone out to the community, nor the response we've received today.
Councillor Hull?
Yeah, thank you. I hope it's not impertinent to ask that question because further up Crossroad, near the Wake campus, there's all sorts of things happening up there. Houses being knocked down and, heritage-listed properties being moved. And so, you know, I don't think it's fanciful to ask that question.
No, good question. Yeah. One just has to distinguish between the North-South Corridor project and any future changes to the South Road Crossroad intersection. Yep.
The other question I have is that in the report, there's a number of comments from the community. I just want to know that how can 58% of responses be somewhat satisfied given I'm not sure I'm reading the right report, but those comments don't seem to add up to 58%. It seems to be more significant than that. That raised numerous concerns.
Councillor Hull, as I read it, what the community engagement staff have done, they have been able to tabulate the ticker box responses to give precise numbers and therefore percentages. In terms of the comments, they are meant to be representative. They are obviously extremely diverse as you read down the page. There are for, against, and with new ideas, and et cetera, et cetera. But I'll ask, so it's not as if that is a list that you can then tabulate a percentage and correlate it to the pie graphs, et cetera. But I'll ask if one of the managers can add to that. Do we have either anyone online or in the house? We have Ms. Pearson, who is our community engagement coordinator or manager or something. Ms. Pearson. For those who are listening to the audio, we have a hybrid meeting in the sense we have some people online and a lot of people in the room. So we're just waiting for this particular manager to come online. I'll just check if anyone else has any questions in the meantime, and we can just park that one that Councillor Hull raised. Councillor Crossland.
Just two questions. The difference between option B as I A and B as I see it is there's less irrigated play space for the community with option B. Is that correct?
Thank you, Councillor, for the question. That is correct from that perspective.
And that's a complete turnaround from every other reserve we've ever looked at. Where are these people who are putting these votes in living? Because usually we get a summary of where the people who responded lived, and I'm just worried that we're actually listening to people who don't live next to that oval and would use it for their kids.
Another question that Ms. Pearson might be able to clarify. I do recall from the previous consultation that most of the responses were fairly close to the oval, but that I know that that doesn't directly answer the question. I'll just see if for you, Councillor Crossland, or any others have any other questions, just while we're waiting for Ms. Pearson. Councillor Gard.
Yes, Your Worship, this may be another one for the queue for Ms. Pearson, but the 900 households that were surveyed don't seem to have come into the summary response. They're not, I assume, part of the 53%, I think the figure was, of respondents in favour of B. So I'm just wondering how they come into the picture in regard to option A or B, or whether they don't and aren't meant to.
Councillor Gard, again, from being familiar with the process here, I can answer that while we're waiting for Ms. Pearson. The 900 odd figure refers to that whole area, which is in the suburb of Glandore. It's set out on page 71 of the report. So that's about 900 houses. However, they are not the respondents. The respondents are, of course, a much smaller number, in the dozens rather than the hundreds. And so the graphs you see and the percentages of support, not support, refer to that smaller number who actually responded.
So is it right to say that they were a mixture of the 900 homes or just the internet respondents?
I better be careful there, because I can't say that all of them with our electronic survey process, one can't say that all of them were within that, but within that area, but I'm pretty confident the bulk of them are. So, Ms. Pearson available?
Sorry, through the chair. She's just swapping devices. She was having issues with the microphone, so she couldn't actually speak. So I've told her to change over. She's going to jump on her laptop, so hopefully she'll be back on in a minute.
All right. Hopefully she's picking up those questions. Any other questions? Councillor Hull, yes?
Mr. Mayor, just to the immediate north of what we're talking about is going to be the cricket nets. On the northern boundary. It's been brought to my attention by residents that an unforeseen consequence of the cricket nets being there is the run-up to the cricket nets will actually place these people halfway towards the middle of the oval.
Mr. Hull, can I just cut in there? The reason that, in a sense, controversy erupted in relation to the Rose Garden is because of the length of run-up required for the cricket nets. So the design, both A and B in the agenda before us, take into account the run-up to the cricket nets. So there will not need to be a run-up through the Rose Garden, and I wouldn't recommend it to the cricketers either.
I'm not suggesting that it's running the other way, Mr. Mayor. The run-up is actually starting almost in the middle of the oval, in the middle to northern aspect of the oval.
No, and Councillor, the run-up would be to the north of the Rose Garden, the Rose Garden and the nets. It wouldn't really involve the oval, if you mean the actual oval.
Yeah, what the residents are saying is if they're having a kick around with a footy out there, they're going to clash with the people doing the run-up to go towards the cricket nets.
It's conceivable, but somewhat fanciful.
Like, you know, to the point where they've even sent a diagram of that.
Well, they are two quite distinct, separate areas, although, yes, cricket balls sometimes go outside of the bounds of the oval, but that would be the exception, one would imagine. I think the team that plays there is usually more accurate than that. Ms. Pearson is here, so hopefully you've heard those questions, Ms. Pearson, and you can clarify. Over to you.
Thank you. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Unfortunately, I was just observing in the background, listening in, so I didn't pick the questions up, and if I could have one of them repeated, please.
Well, there were several, but to start off with, perhaps if we talk about the surveyed group, the one or two questions were about the respondents. If there were 900 or so leaflets that went out to Glandore residents, we sometimes have had lists of streets where the responses came from. That wasn't in this community engagement report. What can you tell us about the percentage of actual respondents who were from within the Glandore suburb, the leaflet catchment, as opposed to emailing in from Timbuktu or somewhere else?
Yes, I don't have that information in front of me at the moment for the council report, but I'm happy to take it on notice and determine the streets and suburbs that were, the street details that were provided as part of the feedback. I imagine, I'm just having a quick look now, but I can get that information back to you if that's possible.
Well, it's up to you, councillors. I mean, if there is a desire to defer the item to get answers to the questions that have been asked, that's always possible. Now, Councillor Masika, I'm afraid you've already spoken in the matter or had your opportunity. So I'm just asking those questions. I'm asking really the councillors who had questions, whether you'd like to repeat them, first of all, and secondly, if the answers aren't satisfactory, you have the option of a procedural motion. Otherwise, you'll simply have to decide what you want to do with the motion that's been moved and seconded. So start off, Councillor Hull.
Yeah, I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we do defer this item until we do listen to the recording, if necessary, or talk to the manager of governments for questions.
Should be sufficient to adjourn it to the 12th of October council meeting. Is that time to get it into that agenda?
Yes.
So if that's the motion, is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Crossland. We vote on a procedural motion straight away. All those in favour? All those against? Then we will deal with the matter this evening. There's no division on a procedural motion. So we are debating the Rose Garden issue. I invite you, if you wish, to repeat the questions for Ms. Pearson, who can hear them now. One would hope that we'll improve the Marion Council technological expertise in these meetings. But, Councillor Hull, did you want to repeat any questions you had?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The question was straightforward. The 58% that was referred to in the report of people being, you know, pretty well happy with what's proposed, doesn't seem to translate into the comments made by quite a number of residents. So I just want to know how we come to that 58% figure when, if you read the comments, the balance is quite negative in terms of the nature of the comments. So that's
right.
My question.
Ms. Pearson?
Yes, so the initial question that was asked in terms of the level of support was a quantitative question. So that was asking people what if they supported A or B. So that was asking them to make a choice between one or two of the options. And then the commentary was around their sentiment around that. So that 58% is where we get that qualitative analysis. When they've been asked between the A and the B option.
I think that's pretty well what the Mayor said earlier. Councillor Crossland, did you want to repeat your question again?
No, thank you. I'll just wait until the debate and I'll speak.
Councillor Gard, you were talking about the 900 and the those that responded and who they were.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I even though Ms. Pearson may not have the data at hand, I'm just wondering through the chair if she could just give an impression to council, seeing we're not deferring the motion, as to what would have been gathered from the 900 people, because that's a very large number of people compared with the number of respondents that came back through website response, which was, I think in my head, I worked out that if three people from the website response had gone the other way, then you'd have a different preference. That's not very many people. So, but the 900 could be very significant. And so on balance, would you have an impression of what those people thought apropos of option B or A?
Of course, with surveys, as Councillor Gard very well knows, at the end of the day, you can really only listen to the people who have answered the question. But Ms. Pearson, what do you say about that? Any impression? How many people were Glandor people?
So out of the people that provided feedback in the second survey around the Rose Garden options, I can see now here that three were outside of the Glandor suburb.
Can you tell us whether they were support or not support people?
As in, I can tell you one was option A. Somewhat satisfied. Yes, and then I can tell you that one was option A with no response to this, very satisfied. And so I'm just going through the raw data, bear with me. And the third was very satisfied for option A, that were outside of the Glandor area.
So bearing in mind we're dealing with very low numbers, the preference for which is the current majority preference, would be even stronger for the slightly larger Rose Garden and slightly less playing space if those externals were excluded. Councillor Crossland, that's raised something for you.
Yes, that's interesting. Are you able to tell us how many of the remaining 35 people out of 900 actually came from the same household?
They are identified by an email address, so there's no duplications of email addresses.
That may be as far as we can take it.
Yeah, sorry, the reason I ask is often when these things get hijacked, you get five people from one house.
Sounds like a point of debate, but understood. I think we can move then to the actual... Well, yes, stretching it, but yes, go ahead.
Number three. In terms of the Department of Infrastructure and Transport, in terms of the issue of Crossroad, marrying up with South Road, when was the last time we actually, it's a conveyancing question, you know, if we're going to actually invest money, we should find out whether there's any impediments. But when was the last time we actually formally asked them what their plans are at that intersection with the Crossroad meets South Road proposal?
I must admit, I'm not aware it's a live issue, but it was mentioned when Department of Infrastructure Transport people came to address us in this chamber.
Well, they were unsure, weren't they?
So. Well, that's right. It's not a live issue, was the way that I put it. But Mr. Hermidas, anything to add?
Correct. Just to confirm, the last formal time before this chamber, we have had numerous discussions via email through our teams with DIT on any of their intentions. So have we asked specifically for differentiating between projects, no, but their overall project intents in the area, yes. And those answers have consistently come back that Glandor Oval is not in scope.
So I think can't really take it much further than that. And you have had plenty of questions, Councillor Hull. So it's been moved and seconded. Are there any speakers against? Councillor Crossland?
You know, I'm going to speak against. This would be the first time ever in my term on council where people are voting against irrigated grass and play space. The very low numbers is really concerning. The fact that we actually don't know who those people are is even more concerning. We normally get that. Without that information, I'm going to definitely vote against and go with what every other community usually votes for, which is more irrigated grass and more play space for kids.
Any other speakers in favour of the motion, which is the option B motion? If not, then Councillor Mason, anything in reply? No, we'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That all those against, raise your hand. So it's carried by majority. Thank you. We move on to code of conduct matter. There may be a procedural motion to defer.
I was going to request that this is either deferred at least to the end of the meeting so that we can finish and then Councillor Hall will probably declare a conflict and leave, or move right now for a deferment. I'm in the chair's hands.
As to a deferral, I'm not sure there would be a conflict of interest. But Ms. McKenzie, what do you think about that? No material gain or benefit, Ms. McKenzie thinks. So if you want to move to defer this item to another meeting, and I thought you might want to relate it to a motion that you're foreshadowing for rescission, then let's hear the motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I am in the process of putting together a rescission motion. I could have tried to rush it and get it for this meeting. I wasn't told that this additional code of conduct matter was coming. Staff are aware that I'm putting a rescission motion, and usually the procedure is that when a rescission motion is coming forward, we don't move on the motion at hand. I have now got a lot more information about the facts leading up to the allegation that is against Councillor Hall, both in terms of the timeline of what we were and weren't told about Mr. O'Hanlon.
So, Councillor Hossan, I think you've probably said enough to set the scene for the procedural motion, which normally doesn't have extensive argument, but I hope everyone gathers the idea. Councillor Crossland wishes to revisit the code of conduct decision. He obviously needs to prepare a motion and have that with due notice for a general council meeting. He wants to defer this code of conduct meeting until after the rescission motion, after a foreshadowed rescission matter is dealt with. And if there is no such rescission motion, this matter can be brought back on, I expect. But the matter's been moved. Before I ask for a second, is that a seconder from Councillor Valescu? So with a procedural motion,
Mr. Mayor,
is that a point of order?
It is a point of order. I just want to know categorically that I don't have a conflict by staying in the room.
Ms. McKenzie, would you like to put something on the record?
It's only deferral, but
Ms. McKenzie is telling me that to take account of any doubt, it might be better to declare a conflict and leave the room for the item. So, Councillor Hull, you're declaring an interest in the outcome and leaving the room. So it's been moved and seconded. Then I put the procedural motion. All those in favour? All those against? That is carried. So I just check that we have the yes, that well, that reflects your motion, doesn't it, Councillor Crossland? What we have written up on the screen there, so that has been carried. Can I ask Councillor Hull to come back in if he wishes? And we move on to the BMX and Cove Soccer facilities. I'll just make a comment there that when I first was advised about the prospect of a community land management plan for these sites, I understood from the advice that a community land management plan would be necessary, but further analysis has clearly shown that it's not necessary. And as you can see from the report, members, the national park status with all of the requirements that the minister would have of the council will be reflected in the lease that the council would give the BMX and the soccer clubs. And so that's why option two is presented to you, which would be an exclusion from community land classification prior to those leases being put in place. It may not be necessary. That's why option two is there. But over to you, members, as to which option you wish to move. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Worship. I'd like to move option two and the reasons you've just outlined.
Well, that's one side of the argument. A question from Councillor Gard.
Just two mini questions, or one mini question. Firstly, Your Worship, in option 2.1, we mention Trott Park as one suburb. I believe we should be mentioning O'Halloran Hill as a second suburb because the BMX track, I believe, is in O'Halloran Hill.
Advice from staff, please. It would be important not to go ahead with that unless it is precisely correct, I would suggest.
Through the chair, whilst I do note that we specify a location for volume, for the land that comprises volume 6238, folio 738, and where it is situated, being Majors Road and Trott Park, we don't specify that for the other components. So the folios as a hard reference are accurate. So I would suggest to the chamber that they in themselves accurately identify the parcels of land. Unfortunately, just sort of looking to my left with my colleagues, I can't offhand confirm whether any of those parcels encroach and to what degree into another suburb. However, the portfolios of land are very clear.
Should it say Trott Park / O'Halloran Hill?
That's an amendment that could be made to the resolution.
I suspect it might be safer. Majors Road is the boundary. So, Councillor Crossland, are you willing to incorporate that into your motion, first of all, or got a question about that?
Yeah, look, we could do that, or we could actually delete the situated at Majors Road Trott Park, because as Mr. Haridis has just mentioned, the records are the folio and volume numbers, so you really don't need the situated at Majors
Road Trott Park. What about deleting Trott Park?
You could delete Trott Park, because they're definitely on Majors
Road. Safe option. All right, so if that's the move is incorporating that. It hasn't been seconded yet, but Councillor Schilling seconding? Oh, it's been moved and seconded. Another mini question from Councillor Gard. That was an absolute zinger, that last one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The question was small, the answer was long. Your Worship, I just wanted to ask management what the positive implications might be of retaining the classification of community land. We're looking at the likely retraction of it or extinction of it. But
rather refraining from ever adopting it. But Mr. Haridis, what would be the advantages as Ms. Councillor Gard is asking?
Thank you for the question, Councillor. And if I miss anything, I will ask Mr. Collins to add to my answers. In general, allowing land to maintain the classification, which is in effect the process, rather than remove the classification of community land, really has its strongest roots and advantages where council owns the land. And what we are confirming for the community is that that classification gives an additional protection to ensure that the land is not sold for other purposes and meets the requirement for community land. The reason why we have put forward option two is the protection regime, given this is national park, the level of investment ownership under a third party or a party outside of council really does maintain those protections. So the advantage of allowing this to hold that classification would just be a further level again of protection for council, under land that is in our care and control rather than ownership.
And if I may add to that, another advantage of community land classification and therefore a management plan is that it gives transparent guidance to what may be undertaken on the land. In this particular case, soccer and BMX and a pump track, that's it, and the ancillary activities. If, for example, council was given a lease over Glenthorne, the Glenthorne Farm property with a playground and sheds and buildings and history and something else, there might be, there would probably need to be a community land management plan so that council could consult the community and then decide the various activities and where they might occur within such a large property. That particular advantage of a community land management plan doesn't really apply in these cases. So it's been moved and seconded. Questions have been answered. Any opposition? Then I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So we'll move on to appointment of deputy mayor. So start off with a degree of informality. Do I have any nominations from around the horseshoe? Councillor Hutchinson, Councillor Crossland, any others? Then we have two candidates. And, well, I always like an election, I must admit. Can... Sure. So while the ballot papers are being distributed... Oh, you already got them? Fantastic. Oh, well, I've got 15 of them, so this is going to be good. Well, I don't... Oh, is this one? Oh, that's for me over there. Okay, right. Okay, I've got one. Now, is it the wish of the candidates that they address the group for 30 seconds or so? Anyone want to? I think we all know you and love you plenty enough. The really interesting one would be if everybody else gives a 30-second speech. But no, that was a joke, Councillor Masika. Sorry, did you have a question?
Not a question, Your Worship.
It's a very good question how you're going to vote. If you could text Ms. McKenzie, because okay. she is the returning officer, essentially. Yeah, well, hopefully she has Councillor Masika's number in her phone. So I invite you to just remind us, we are writing one name, are we, next to number one? Is that how it works?
Yeah, correct.
And then, I don't know, fold in halves or make a paper plane as you wish and hand up. Just while that is happening, our next item, which is election to committees, just for you to think about it for a few seconds, I propose to do the presiding member positions first, and then the councillor positions in respect of asset sustainability and planning and development. Then we'll go from there to review and selection, and then finally finance and audit. So given that it really won't take long, I think we should just wait a sec for the vote on Deputy Mayor. We can just rest for a moment. Ms. McKenzie, I'll let you announce the winner.
Councillor Hutchinson.
Deputy Mayor Hutchinson for the next year. So now we turn to page 116 of the agenda, dealing first with the presiding member of the Asset and Sustainability Committee, and then... I beg your pardon. There's actually a council motion, as Mackenzie draws my attention to that, for Deputy Mayor. So there's a motion before the council, and Councillor Hutchinson might want to leave conflict of interest in relation to the position. So now this could be a wild reversal. Someone like to move the motion as printed? Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Duncan. Thank you. Anyone against? I'll put the motion. All those in, sorry. Councillor Hull speaking against. I beg your pardon. I haven't called. Didn't think I'd called for a vote yet, but I've. Yes. I was just clarifying whether it was speaking or voting against. Thank you, Councillor Hull, for the clarification. I'll take the vote again. All those in favour. All those against. That is carried by majority. Thank you. And please advise Councillor Hutchinson to resume his seat. Now I'll ask if, unless there's a violent disagreement, it is a bit arbitrary how we proceed, but traditionally we've done the presiding members first. So call for nominations in relation to the presiding member of the Asset and Sustainability Committee. I have Councillor Schilling and Councillor Crossland with hands up. Just two. All right, we have two candidates. So take another ballot paper, please. Just one. And just write a name at the top, please. Can I just ask if any elected members had any questions or problems with the date, time, place of council meetings for 2022, which is the next item on the agenda, page 119. Everyone cool with that? Councillor Gard, question?
I just wondered whether the June meeting, second Tuesday in June, would clash with a long weekend and whether we should not perhaps try and dodge long weekends for more freedom for councillors, but nothing personal to me. But
can someone check when the June long weekend is, please? Isn't it? Is it Queen's birthday? Second Monday. So what have we said for June? 14th of June. So the 6th, the 13th. So that would be a day after the long weekend. Is that a you think that's a problem, Councillor Gard?
Your Worship, I just put it to the floor because it doesn't necessarily affect me, but I just think in principle it's harder.
Well, it's hopefully, and let's say people have gone away for the long weekend, they've got all day Tuesday to come back. Well, you'd read it in the caravan while you're away, of course. So if there's business class flights have a good connection usually with the internet. Right, I think unless there's another problem, we'll skip over that. Now, Ms. McKenzie, who's the successful presiding member?
Councillor Crossland,
Assets and Sustainability Committee. Now we move to presiding member of the Planning and Development Committee. Who, any candidates? Councillor Clancy, Councillor Telfer, any others? Then we have two. So please put a name next to number one. I haven't heard we've had any informals yet, so that's good. With the leave of the meeting, we could then proceed to the item of meetings next year, page 119. Moved Councillor Hutchinson as printed, seconded Councillor Duncan. Any opposition? With all due respect to the Queen and her birthday on the 13th of June. It was moved Hutchinson, seconded Duncan. All those in favour, please raise your hand. That's unanimous. Thank you. Now we'll just wait a moment for our returning officer in relation to the Planning and Development Committee.
Councillor Clancy.
So Clancy, thank you. And now we'll look to members of the committees. So we'll just jump back to the Asset and Sustainability Committee. Councillor Crossland is already on there. We've got 4 to 6 positions. Show of hands. 1, 2. A clarification, Councillor Gard, thank you. This is Asset and Sustainability Committee. This is for committee positions. Yes, so I've got Councillor Pryor, Councillor Hull, Councillor Gard, looking for probably at least one more, if anyone would like to. Well, let's put those three, let's pencil those three in. But having said that, it may depend on, you know, we can't have everybody on the next committee, so there might be a situation of overflow. So if I look to the Planning and Development Committee, I'm looking, sorry, Councillor Duncan? So Asset and Sustainability Committee, Councillor Crossland is chair. We have Councillor Pryor, Councillor Hull and Councillor Gard are guaranteed spots. And we would certainly encourage another member to join. Let's go to the membership of the Planning and Development Committee. If there are more than 6, it'll be a ballot. But put your hand up clearly. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, no. Councillor Clancy is chair, not counting her. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's absolutely in order. So they are Councillors Masika, Mason, Velescu, Telfer and Hutchinson. Right. So that's appropriate for a motion. Looking at the Review and Selection Committee nominations, Councillor Schilling, Councillor Duncan. It is sufficient to have 2. So thank you, Councillor Schilling and Councillor Duncan. And who hasn't got a committee at the moment? Everyone's happy. Well, it was designed that way to be flexible, so we'll just leave it at that. I meant in terms of those multi-number committees. Finance and Audit, thank you. I do notice in the report the heading says 1 or 2, and I thought that's what we had resolved last time, but the report paragraph detail says council was required to appoint 2. A typo, I'm told, so it's 1 or 2. So Finance and Audit, Councillor Duncan is keen. Thank you, appreciate that. It's a lot of hard work, but very rewarding, I believe. So thank you, Councillor Duncan. So with that, we have names to fill in for all of those positions. Just check that we've got them all recorded. Everyone happy? Right, so in voting for this block of appointments, the chairs of the committees will have a conflict of interest as it is a special position. So if Councillors Crossland and Clancy, if you'd like to declare that interest and leave the room, they are doing so. And we'll see how we go. So would someone like to move as printed with all of those people who have kindly volunteered? Councillor Mason, seconded Councillor Telfer. Anyone speaking against? Then all those in favour, raise your hand. Unanimous, thank you. The Councillors Crossland and Clancy can be invited back in. Thanks very much. for sorting that out. So we've done appointment of next year's dates. We go right through to the Loxton Wakery matter. Now, this, just checking with Ms. McKenzie, is this a two-stage process where there needs to be a motion to bring it back on? So, Councillor Hull, would you like to do that? Regardless of the merits of the item, just would you like to bring it back on?
Mr. Mayor, regardless of the merits of the item, I think the council's relying on me to do this. Well, if nobody else does it, it's not going to be dealt with tonight. If correct me if I'm wrong.
Procedurally, matters left lying on the table need to be brought back via a member's motion on notice.
It could be another member.
It could be.
It could be done by another member. Could be done by another member, Councillor Hull.
It can be done by another member too.
I believe so, yes.
I think you best find my name, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
The only thing is that, Councillor Hull, I believe you were wanting more information, and that's why we didn't deal with it last time. Do you just want to clarify whether you have enough information or not? That would help the rest of us.
Yeah, no. As I said, on the merits of the subject, I would prefer not to move it. If I'm not obliged to,
You're not obliged to. Then it is up to any member if they wish to bring it back on. They don't have to. And it may be that they support the matter or don't support the matter in terms of funding.
Importantly, it's on the agenda tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Well, it is on the agenda. We could dispatch it one way or another. Councillor Clancy. First, we need to vote on that. Just remind me, Ms. McKenzie, what is the proper wording to make it real proper?
I think we've just used the language that the matter lying left lying on the table is brought back.
And that's what Councillor Clancy said. Yes, very good. It's a procedural motion, so there's no debate at this point. Is that seconded? Councillor Duncan, thank you. Seconded. We'll vote on whether to debate this now or not. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. So we will debate it now. Before I come to Councillor Clancy, I just want to... the Mayor has a question about it. I was still left with a lack of clarity with this one about the two different points of view, you know, how people get paid more, how it applies at Marion and how it doesn't. I mean, I'm looking at page 124, 125, and I particularly focused on that paragraph that starts off, the view is, and I wasn't sure whose view that was. Mr. Harrison, can you help with that?
So through the chair, and also I have our very knowledgeable colleague with us this evening, Ms. Jess Lynch, who's the new manager of People and Culture. So she may be well versed in this after this is day 7, I think, but I will do the attempt first to see whether I can bring some clarification. So because of compressed weeks, whether they are compressed fortnights, whether they consist of 9 days or 8 days compressed, and people work additional time on each of those days, if the RDO falls on the Monday, and the Monday happens to be a public holiday, the Loxton Council are arguing or challenging that they should only pay them the minimum amount of money as if it was calculated on a 10-day fortnight. By convention and practice, and the way that we have interpreted our award and agreement, which is rather silent on the interpretation, we have elected to work out what the daily rate is over the compressed fortnight, whether it's 8 days or 9 days, and we have made that payment applicable on the public holiday, the RDO. So in fact, in simple summary, what Loxton is contesting, we are actually practising.
Right. So, and that's why I began to be puzzled why, sounds like a victory for the workers, Comrade Harrison. And I wondered why then council would recommend to approve the request if it was something that we don't practice and we don't think is right for our workers. Mr. Harrison.
So maybe through the chair and I ask the same question. I think there are two issues here to be considered by the elected members, please. One is there is a standing policy item on behalf of the LGA where councils provide support to other councils who have demonstrated that there are merits on taking on litigation or a court proceeding type matter. And maybe a proposition is that we don't question necessarily the merits of that, rather we question the validity of providing monetary support for a decision which has been taken by a council and is also supported by the LGA board that it has merits to do so on that case. We could then, as a council or as elected members, you could take into consideration of whether it is appropriate or not to provide money to another council if the litigation or the court proceedings involves a matter which is actually what we're adopting or practicing in reality. So I think there are two issues. One is whether or not you support the policy of the LGA to provide monetary support to a neighbouring council, stands alone, and or you then conflate that position based on what a practice is within our own council environment.
Thank you for clarifying the two distinct issues. So if we went along with this, just I'm trying to summarise for everyone's benefit here and my own understanding. If we went along with this, it wouldn't be to necessarily get a benefit for the city of Marion because we're happy with the arrangement we have with our workers, but it's part of being in the LGA club, if you like, being a good sport and probably recognising that the Metropolitan Councils basically are the cash cow for the LGA services provided to the country councils who are struggling, and that's why they have much higher percentage rate increases as a whole. So thank you. I understand that much better. One thing that comes out of this, and I wanted to say it in a public meeting, is that I think we should work up a proposal to take to a local government general meeting for a better way of doing this. Because if you can imagine the time chewed up every time there's a bit of litigation with maybe a common issue, for 68 councils to debate it, and fair enough, I don't know how many councils actually then get into the merits and try and understand it and actually have a view on the merits, and all of that's discussed publicly for the participants, like whether it be the union or some other litigant, to understand where people are coming from, which is surely not to the benefit of the council litigant in the case. Surely it would be better for the LGA to have a central legal fund and they would have a committee or it goes to the LGA board. And if funding is approved, then it might be 0.5% levy on all councils every year, part of the membership fee, builds up in a little war chest. And if that's a case that's warranted, then they get help with that funding rather than asking every council every time for $2,000 or $5,000. So, Ms. McKenzie, Mr. Harrison, is that something that might be considered? Anyway, excuse the Mayor intervening there, but it just seemed to me this is a very strange way of doing things. Councillor Clancy, you wanted to move the motion.
Yeah, I'd like to move the opposite to what staff have recommended. On the same lines of what you've discussed, Mayor Hannah. It also is not just about whether or not the legal argument has merit. It's about whether or not the case at hand actually has broad-reaching impact on our council, the councils across South Australia, and it doesn't in this case. So I don't think that we have any case to contribute to this. If we're going to contribute, I'd rather give them $100,000. They can pay the workers for the next 4 years.
Thank you. Well said. So if that is moved to the word declines instead of requests, instead of approves, that would be adequate wording. Now, is that seconded? Councillor Gard.
Thank you, Your Worship. I will second that. I wanted to suggest that we add the words without prejudice to our motion because it in some small way heads off any assumption that we might be judging the matter. I feel that we need to be take up a neutral position as to the matter itself, albeit there is the other issue in principle as to whether we support a payment or not.
The report does state that it that making a contribution or not doesn't have, or, summarising, doesn't have any connection to the merits of the case as such. I wonder if one of our managers has any comment on that. Ms. McKenzie? Mr. Harrison?
I would certainly personally sit comfortable with that proposition. I don't think it impacts on a negative and or a positive way on the merits of Loxton taking the course of action that they think is appropriate. So I would sit comfortable with that.
So, Councillor Gard, I'm not sure if you're seconding the motion or not. I mean, it's yeah.
Your Worship, I was going to suggest that I second it and change the motion with those two words with the agreement of the mover.
Yes, I personally don't think they're necessary. But anyway, Councillor Clancy, what do you think? Put them in there somewhere. Doesn't really have any impact either way. So where could they be added in? Comma, without prejudice, comma. You know, when I see the mayor of Loxton Wakery, perhaps I can explain our position. There's no other consequence apart from the fact that elected members of the City of Marion may not be appointed to various LGA boards and so on in the future. But no, you go ahead. That's seconded. Did you have any further comment, Councillor Gard? Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. So that, looking, no, that's it, isn't it? I declare the meeting closed. Thank you.